All right, let's dive in, shall we? Today we're tackling a case that should really grab the attention of any law student out there. It's officesupplystore.com/v Kansas City School Board. And trust me, this one's a gold mine when it comes to understanding personal jurisdiction and what happens when you try to enforce judgments across state lines.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those cases that throws a spotlight on a concept that every future litigator needs to have down pat.
Exactly. So here's the basic scenario. We've got a company called officesupplystore.com, based in Washington State. They decide to sue the Kansas City School District, which, as you might guess, is located in Missouri.
Right. Totally different states.
And get this. They filed the lawsuit in California. Yeah, California. All over a dispute involving unpaid office supplies.
Wait, so a Washington company is suing a Missouri school district in California? That's already raising some eyebrows.
Right, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Now, the school district, for whatever reason, they completely ignored the lawsuit. They didn't respond, didn't show up in court, nothing.
Okay, so what happened?
Well, as you can imagine, the California court entered a default judgment against them for over $30,000. Case closed, you might think.
Yeah, seems pretty straightforward.
But here's the twist. Office Supply then tries to take that California judgment and enforce it in Missouri, where the school district actually has assets and operates.
Ah, so that's where the real conflict arises.
Exactly. Because the school district finally decides to fight back, they basically said, hold on, California had no business issuing that judgment against us in the first place. They never had the authority.
So it all boils down to this fundamental question of personal jurisdiction. Can a court in one state really issue a binding judgment against a defendant who has almost no connection to that state?
Precisely. And that's the question we're going to unpack today. Why would a Washington company sue a Missouri school district in California? And could California really exercise that kind of power over an out-of-state defendant?
The classic jurisdictional puzzle.
To really understand this, let's lay out the specific facts. So you've got OfficeSupplyStore.com, incorporated in Washington. They sue the Kansas City School District, located in Missouri. The fight is over about $17,000 in unpaid invoices for office supplies.
Okay, standard breach of contract kind of stuff.
Right. But the crucial part is where they filed the initial lawsuit, California State Court. The school district ghosts them, doesn't respond at all, so bam, a default judgment for over $30,000. Ouch!
Yeah, ignoring a lawsuit is never a good strategy.
Definitely not. So they try to register that California judgment in Missouri, thinking they can finally collect. That's when the school district finally wakes up and says, wait a minute, California never had the right to tell us what to do. They appealed, arguing that the whole judgment was invalid because California lacked personal jurisdiction over them.
I see. So their argument wasn't necessarily that they didn't owe the money. It was that the entire California judgment was illegitimate from the get-go.
Exactly. They were challenging the very foundation of the case. Now, Office Supply, they tried to defend their choice of California by pointing to, get this, a California P.O. box listed on some of their invoices.
A P.O. box, seriously.
Yep. And a payment address in California. They claimed these were enough to establish jurisdiction.
That seems pretty weak.
Right. Especially considering the Kansas City School District had absolutely zero physical presence in California. No offices, no employees, no operations whatsoever.
So the question is, were those flimsy connections enough for California to exercise power over a Missouri school district?
Exactly. Could they issue a legally binding order?
Let's break down the legal side of this, because that's where it gets really interesting for you.
Absolutely. So did the California court actually have personal jurisdiction over the Kansas City School District?
Well, to answer that, we need to delve into the two primary types of personal jurisdiction: general jurisdiction and specific jurisdiction. General jurisdiction basically means a court has broad authority over a defendant because that defendant's ties to the state are so significant and continuous.
Okay, like they're practically residents of that state, even if they're not officially.
Exactly. It's about having a substantial presence in the state, continuous and systematic contacts, as the legal jargon goes.
So in this case, did the Kansas City School District have that level of connection with California?
Not even close. They had zero offices, no employees based there, no regular business activity in California. Their only connection was this one-time purchase of office supplies.
Right. So general jurisdiction is a no-go. That makes sense. So what about specific jurisdiction then?
Specific jurisdiction is narrower. It comes into play when the lawsuit itself arises directly out of or is closely related to the defendant's specific interactions with the state where the court sits.
So because the office supplies were bought from Office Supply, which at least had a P.O. box in California, could that be enough for a specific jurisdiction?
Well, not so fast. The court pointed out several key factors that defeated specific jurisdiction here. For starters, Office Supply wasn't even based in California. They were incorporated in Washington.
Right, right.
Also, the court noted that the office supplies were shipped from various places around the country, not necessarily from California. And here's the kicker. The California payment address.
Yeah.
It was chosen by Office Supply, not the Kansas City School District. The school district didn't choose to direct any activity toward California in that sense.
So it wasn't like they were intentionally doing business in California.
Exactly. That leads us to a really crucial concept you need to understand. Purposeful availment. This idea, which comes from a landmark case called International Shoe, basically says that for a specific jurisdiction to exist, the defendant must have intentionally taken actions that targeted the forum state. They must have purposefully availed themselves of doing business there.
So they're basically saying, hey, I want to benefit from being in this state, and I'm okay with being subject to its laws.
Right. And the court here found that the Kansas City School District hadn't done anything like that with California. The connection was pretty much one-sided, driven by Office Supply's choices.
Now, you mentioned earlier that Office Supply tried to rely on a forum selection clause on some invoices. Didn't that clause say any disputes had to be settled in California?
Yes, but the court wasn't buying it. This actually brings up an interesting point about contract law. You see, under the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, a forum selection clause added to a contract after the basic offer and acceptance might be seen as a material alteration.
Okay, so what does that mean for a situation like this?
Well, the Kansas City School District isn't considered a merchant under the UCC. They're just a school district buying supplies.
Mm-hmm.
So unless they very clearly agreed to that forum selection clause, it wouldn't automatically bind them.
So just sticking it on an invoice isn't enough to force the other party to litigate across the country?
Not necessarily, no. There has to be some evidence that both sides understood and agreed to it, especially for something as significant as choosing a specific state for any legal battles.
Makes sense. They need to know what they're signing up for.
Exactly. And the court in this case didn't see any proof that the school district ever actually consented to resolving disputes in California. It's like Office Supply was trying to sneak it in there.
Sneaky, sneaky. So this whole case really drives home the idea that jurisdiction can't be created unilaterally. It has to have a solid legal basis.
Precisely. And it reminds me of another important case, Burger King v. Rudzevich, which emphasized that specific jurisdiction only exists when the defendant's actions are intentionally directed toward a specific state. Random or accidental contacts just aren't enough.
So let's zoom out and highlight the key takeaways from this case for our listeners. What's the most important rule they need to remember about personal jurisdiction?
The biggest takeaway is this. If a court doesn't have personal jurisdiction over a defendant, any judgment they issue is essentially worthless. It's void, it has no legal effect, and other states aren't obligated to recognize it.
So even if you win a default judgment, it doesn't mean anything if the court didn't have the power to hear the case in the first place.
Exactly. And the three-part test for specific jurisdiction that the Missouri court used is a really helpful tool to remember. Did the defendant purposefully avail themselves of the forum state? Did the lawsuit arise from the defendant's contacts with that state? And would exercising jurisdiction be fair and reasonable in this case?
All good questions to ask when you're evaluating whether a particular court has the power to hear a case.
Absolutely. And for our law students out there, this case underscores how vital these seemingly technical procedural rules are. Personal jurisdiction can make or break your case, regardless of how strong your arguments are on the merits.
It's a reminder that procedure isn't just a bunch of formalities. It's the foundation of a fair and legitimate legal system.
Couldn't agree more.
Now, one last point I want to clarify. When Office Supply tried to register their California judgment in Missouri, the Missouri Court of Appeals didn't just rubber stamp the lower court's decision, right?
Oh, no. They used what's called a de novo standard of review. Basically, they looked at the whole issue of jurisdiction from scratch without giving any special deference to what the trial court had decided.
So they weren't bound by the lower court's ruling on jurisdiction?
Nope. They reviewed it independently as a question of law.
That emphasizes how important it is to get jurisdiction right from the very beginning. It's going to be scrutinized.
Absolutely. No shortcuts on that.
So the big lesson from OfficeSupplyStore.com v. Kansas City School Board is this. You have to think carefully about personal jurisdiction before you file that lawsuit, especially if you're dealing with parties in different states. A default judgment might feel like a win, but it's meaningless if the court overreached.
Totally agree. It's about making sure you're playing the game on the right field, so to speak.
And for all our listeners, I think this case raises some really interesting questions about how these traditional jurisdictional concepts apply in our digital age. Businesses can operate online and reach customers all over the country. So how do we determine jurisdiction when transactions are happening virtually? What level of online activity is enough to establish a connection with a particular state? It's a constantly evolving area of law.
Oh, definitely. The internet age is throwing some curveballs at our legal system, and it'll be fascinating to see how these principles continue to develop.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive. Thanks for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
And for all you future legal eagles out there, keep those brains sharp, and we'll see you on our next deep dive.
See you then.